Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
How was your night? What did you do last night? How was your night? Because the Golden State Warriors' night was pretty horrible. They lost to Marcus Cousins to a leg injury. He might be out the rest of the year. They lost a 31-point second half lead. Then they lost game two of their series against the LA Clippers, 135-131. In other words, that's a hell of a lot of bad for one night. And of course, on top of that, everybody's going to come flying in today with a hell of a lot of bad takes, hot takes. Everybody's going to be running in with a giant sledgehammer to hammer that clown-sized panic button. So let me be the one to stop this before it starts. Yes, Golden State blew a 31-point lead with less than 20 minutes to go in the game. Yes, they allowed 85 points in the second half. And you can point to a dozen different reasons as to why that went down. They lost to Marcus Cousins. Steph Curry got into foul trouble and went from red hot before to ice cold after he came back in. Kevin Durant had 8 official shots. More importantly, 9 official turnovers. I mean, I can go on, but it's not really worth it. Yes, blowing a 31-point lead in less than 20 minutes at home in a playoff game is an epic collapse. But it does not mean that they're in trouble. Does not mean they're in trouble in that series. And no, last night had nothing to do with DeMarcus Cousins going down. He went down early in the game, and then Golden State built that lead after he went down. So if they were rattled by losing him, they picked a weird way of showing it. By going from down 31 at the time of the injury to up 31 with 7:31 to go in the third. And no, the Warriors did not get exposed last night. Not for anything that we didn't already know about these guys. Like, what did you learn last night? That they've got a habit of switching off at times? That they stop playing sometimes? That they sometimes coast and do it at really bad times? That the chemistry of this team is not as great as it's been in years past. That defensive intensity is an issue. I mean, hell, tell me something I didn't already know. We knew all of this already. I already knew. Hell, tell Steve Kerr something he didn't already know. Because nobody knows that team better than Steve Kerr does. He said, quote, "It doesn't feel strange to me. No. At this stage, nothing surprises me that happens with our team and where we are. I was very concerned coming into this game, and in some ways, we had this coming. And we'll see if we can actually respond to it and do something good with it," end quote. Again, everything we saw last night, we have seen before. We knew all of this about Golden State. Just like we've known, they're human. And being human, they probably figured, up 31, with under 20 minutes to go at home, the game was over. Because it was. A billion times out of a billion, that game is over. Which is exactly why last night is more about the Clippers than it is Golden State. Give the Clippers some bleeping credit.
I mean, for real.
Down 31 on the road in the second half against a team that's won the last 2 titles, 3 of the last 4. That's the time that everybody else would pack it in, shut it down, go home, ice up, get some ibuprofen. You know, prepare for the flight back. Start looking at tee times. Pretty much anybody except these Clippers. Now, when they fall behind 31, that's when they dial in. Man, they're gritty as hell. They don't care if they're down 30 or if they're up 30. You think a team with Pat Beverly is going to just shut it down? Hell no. Pat Beverly fouled out, but he went down swinging like he always does. And he eventually took Kevin Durant with him. And know this, he's not there to agitate people like everybody seems to think, like everybody says, myself included. No, Pat Beverly says, "I'm doing work. I'm here to do a job. It's a job I like a lot, and it's a job that I care a hell of a lot about."
I can't help people get irritated about it. It's not my fault. I go out there, I try to be the best defender on the planet, consistently, in and out, day and out. I take my role, take my job very seriously, and I do it for my teammates. You know, I understand my role, and I understand how to get stops, and, you know, KD's not easy cover, but it's fun out there for sure.
Man, it is fun out there. It's fun out here watching him out there. Hell of a lot of fun. This is why I said yesterday that matchup is one of my favorite matchups in a long time, because Beverly does not care. He's looking to be the best defender on the bleeping planet. You think that changes whether he's up 30 or down 30? Hell no. He probably didn't even know the score. You think Lou Williams is going to stop taking shots? He went 11 for 17, 26 points, 7 assists in the final 20 minutes. 26 and 7 is a great game. He did it in a quarter and a half. How about some love for Montrezl Harrell? All he did was go 5 for 5 for 17 points in the final 20 minutes. Maybe some love for Doc Rivers, who has reminded everybody just how damn good of a coach he is. He stayed on it with this team in the second half of the season and in the second half last night. It's all about their identity. Doc said, quote, "Every time out, it's just who we are. Be us. We said it. Let's be us. Don't change. Keep playing the way we play," end quote. How about my man, Landry Shamet, doing this?
From 31 down, keeping going left. Gilgeous Alexander, kick out to Shamet for three. He got it! Landry Shamet hits a three, and from 31 down to up two, inside 16 seconds.
My man, that's a rookie going assassin in the final seconds of a game against the three-time champs in their house. The Clippers were a team that was supposed to wave the white flag after the Tobias Harris trade, right? The season ended that night, except it didn't, because they got a hell of a lot of heart. They've got a hell of a lot of grit. I'm going to say they've got a hell of a lot more grit than those Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan teams had. I'm not saying they're better. I'm saying they're a hell of a lot tougher, and they've got much better chemistry than those teams had. Not only did they do the work in the second half, they didn't party like they did anything after the game. Pat Beverly throwing around weights while doing wall sits. Lou Williams getting ice, eating nachos, and checking Twitter. Ice. These pictures are incredible. If you haven't seen them, go to the Clippers Twitter feed. You got to check it out, because it shows you how unimpressed the Clippers players were with what they did. Now, don't get it twisted, and don't get me wrong. Golden State is going to win this series. They will bounce back. Andrew Bogut summed up the mood best in that Golden State locker room.
It was you know, and that's actually a positive sign, in my opinion. You know, it wasn't, you know, something where we're like, oh, we'll get him next time. You know, we're genuinely pissed off about it.
Right, mate? They're generally pissed off about it. So the problem for Golden State is that instead of wrapping it up and resting up, they're going to have to play at least 48 more minutes. And they'll most likely have to do it without DeMarcus Cousins. And playing at least one more game and doing it without Cousins means more minutes for everybody. Because any minutes against these Clippers are going to be a battle. They'll get through the round. They're still the team to beat. But they just made it a hell of a lot tougher on themselves. Tougher than it had to be. Then again, when you consider who these two teams are, that should not surprise anybody at all. It's just what they do. Both of them. Just be sure to give the Clippers some bleeping credit. For real.
Give them some credit. I mean, for real.
Ryan Hollins joins us. Ryan, great to have you. How are you?
What's up, brother? It's been a while.
It's been a while, man. What's up? How you doing?
Good, man. Doing good.
Good. Good to have you. Listen, you've been around the game a long, long time as a player and now as an analyst. I know the respect you have for the Clippers and how hard they grind, how hard they battle. But Ryan, be honest. When Golden State was up 31 with less than 20 minutes to go last night, did you think that game was over?
You know, it's interesting, Jim. I'm always going to, you know, kind of say what should happen out there and what you should see. And to a T, the Clippers were able to execute the game plan going into the fourth quarter. You know, you had to cut that thing to 15, you know, to kind of see hope. And they were down 16. They get a steal, and it cuts to 14. I look at Ralph and say, Ralph, man, there's a chance right here. So, Ralph, the one thing they got to do, they have to get stops, and they got to go and score. And when I say we saw that play after play after play after play, it was unreal. So I was really, I mean, fortunate to just watch it unwind. And, you know, as a player, normally if you're down 20, you want to cut it to 10. Well, down 30, your number is 15. And then, like I said, they got under 10. And once you get under 10, Jim, I don't know what it is in basketball that it's, it's under 10, it's obtainable. It's
right.
Always obtainable. And down to the closing seconds, there's still this feel that, okay, we don't have to take these guys serious. Okay, they fought back. Now it's time for Curry to do some Curry magic and Durant. And, you know, Durant had a big-time slam. Clippers answer. Okay, Durant fouls out. Curry comes back and hits an impossible three-point shot. Guess what? Clippers come right back and answer. So what you're seeing right now is there's absolutely no fear of the Warriors. And it starts with Patrick Beverley. And as a guy who played, you know, years in the league, when your point guard stares into the face of one of the greatest scorers to ever play in the NBA at all time and says, I want a piece of you. I own you. I want every bit of that action. The only thing you can do is be inspired. And the rest of the Clippers are literally following suit. Patrick Beverley's the guy on the schoolyard. He finds the biggest kid, and he goes and bops him in the nose. This is what's happening.
It can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or you're running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not there yet, you can feel a bit tempted to try to sneak across the tracks. Don't do it. Ever. Trains are often going a lot faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes the right way, it can take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is just a crushed hunk of metal. And what used to be you? Well, much better not to think about that. The point is, you cannot know how quickly the train will arrive. The train can't stop even if it does see you. The result is a disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And you just need to remember one thing. Stop. Trains can't. Ryan, it is awesome. I love it. I was talking about that matchup before, and it's played out beautifully. You mentioned your thoughts on the matchup, but I've got a question. What do you think that Durant makes of that matchup? Is Pat getting to him?
I'm be honest, man. This is a story that's being told right now, Jim. So I've had a chance to be, you know, a role player on some really good teams alongside Dirk, Garnett, Paul Pierce, Blake and Chris, really good players. You're supposed to protect your stars. And Golden State's not protecting KD. And in fact, Steve Kerr has really kind of put the clamps on KD. Kevin, you know, be bigger than that. Kevin, be this, be that. Come on, Kevin, use your head. He's censoring Kevin Durant to where Kevin Durant can't really be Kevin Durant. There should be more people running to his aid rather than telling Kevin to just, you know, be quiet and just kind of play basketball. Playoff basketball is full of energy, effort, feelings, emotions, Jim. You've seen it from time in to time out. And Kerr's taking that away from Durant. Now, Kevin did his best last game to be on his best behavior, keep his mouth shut, play basketball. But that's not who KD is. And I can literally see it burning up. And it's funny, you know, the referees kind of, when they both got kicked out, there's this feeling, Jim, that Patrick Beverley was out of control. Patrick Beverley has been doing that since game one of the NBA season. That's just who he is. He's very cool, calm, and collected, and really embraced. And Kevin Durant's told, hey, man, chill out. So I don't want to speak for that locker room, but I know that instead of coming to the aid of your star, there's a bit of a divide right there that you got to take a look at, and hopefully the Clippers can keep using that to their advantage.
Ryan Hollins joining us. That is really interesting analysis. Ryan, like, so the bottom line, if it were you, do you think KD should stand up for himself? I mean, it's Pat Beverley. He's a guard. Or do you think that Draymond Green should be in there and doing some of that dirty work for him? And what is that divide in that locker room? If you had to guess, how do you think that thing sets up right now? What are these guys thinking?
I mean, look, man, you got to take care of your stars. I know what nobody touching Kevin Garnett without hearing something or feeling something on a rebound or something from us. When nobody touching Blake Griffin, You didn't have to worry about Chris Paul. You didn't have to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, those guys were free to play basketball. There's mind games beyond the game. You want to allow your stars to be free when nobody touching Dirk, like, or you had to hear it from everybody. I remember one time I was playing against the Heat, and I kind of chucked LeBron. I got him with a good shot. Do you know the last five possessions down the floor, James Jones tagged me in my back. The very next play, Mike Miller clotheslined me. I was going for a rebound. Udonis Haslam pulled me out the air. You were not allowed to touch LeBron James. And that just was the unwritten rule. That's how you take care of stars. You go back to Michael Jordan. You couldn't touch Jordan, or Rodman was going to do something wild. You know what I'm saying? That's just the unwritten rules. Charles Oakley, obviously, that's why he's so famous. Like, I just you know, with all due respect, and I hope it keeps going the same way, Kevin Durant looks really alone. And then when you don't get back by your coach, you're looking at the other side going, dang, man, that's kind of how I fit. Even as much as we want to scrutinize Oklahoma City, if you have something to say to Durant, dude, you had to worry about Adams. You had to worry about Westbrook, Ibaka. I mean, their whole team was coming at you. It's just a different pedigree, man. You know, we grew up playing ball in the park, you know, kind of hustling for everything, trash talking. And when you strip a player of that, you take away who he is, man. And it's just – I don't know. It's a real interesting dynamic to check out for.
It's Ryan Hollins joining us. It's a really interesting dynamic, a really interesting part of analysis. So how does it play out, Ryan? For instance, Golden State handled their business in game one. They seem to have game two put away. It got away from them. How do you think Golden State shows up in game three?
Here's the reality. I see this thing twofold. Golden State Warriors have been in this situation before. They've been down 3-1 in the playoffs. They've had to go into game sevens on the road, essentially underhanded, injured, a little hobbled, and they've been able to pull it out with a lot less. Now, are we going to cry any tears for a team losing their fifth all-star? They already have four against a team that literally doesn't have one guy career all-star appearance. No, nobody is. Not a soul, Jim. Not anybody. Everybody's cheering for David right now rather than Goliath. Now, here's the reality. The Clippers match up extremely well against Golden State. Playoff basketball is always won. Remember me and quote me on this, and I want you to always watch this, Jim. You know this as well as I do. It's about matchups. And right now, the Clippers match up extremely well. There is nobody inside with DeMarcus Cousins going out to stop Montrezl Harrell. There is nobody who can stay in front of Lou Williams. And normally, I mean, honestly, if I had to pick the five best defenders in the league to guard a wing, I would say Golden State has them, but nobody right now has an answer for Golden State. So we'll have to see schematically what Kerr is going to have to do, because right now just playing him straight up one-on-one is not working with his size, his shooting, and you know, his ability to finish in the rim. Also, with Cousins out, dude, remember prior to DeMarcus Cousins coming back from injury, and you can say his minutes haven't been great, but nobody punked Golden State at the rim when he's in there. And they were absolutely atrocious, one of the bottom teams in the league in rebounding and actually paint defense without DeMarcus Cousins. So now they've got to reinvent themselves. I'm intrigued to see what happens. And I get it. Their best lineups are small. Looney provides switching and, you know, just diversity and to their lineup, but it's something that you can do in spurts, and it's always nice to have Cousins or a guy like that in the background. So we'll see what happens. And now you're heavily relying on Andrew Bogut, and there's another factor that Damian James Jones was forgive me for messing his name up. This kid goes out with a pectoral pull or muscle injury, and I would expect him to have been back around playoff time. I had to talk with one of the coaches and said, well, you know, we really don't need him. We're kind of loaded at the five. No, you're not loaded at the shot blocking position anymore. So I want to see the changes that Kerr makes, but if you're the Clippers, you're salivating, Jim.
We're talking to Ryan Hollins. Basketball always has been, always will be a game of matchups. And what I'm hearing from you, and this is obviously true, they match up really well, especially with Cousins going down. An NBA analyst, an LA Clippers broadcaster, a 10-year NBA vet. He was a panelist back in the day on my daily TV show. And that is some great bit of analysis right there. Ryan, nice job. You and I should have come together much sooner once again, and we will do it again soon. Well done, man.
I blame you for that, Jim. Come on, bro.
Shop O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock. Brands you can trust, like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shocks, Superstart Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. According to reports, Russell Wilson has got a new contract. According to Jim Rome, it's a really good idea. Now, that whole story was kind of weird from the jump. There was that deadline that Wilson set for the team to get himself that deal by midnight last night. There was the suggestion that the Seahawks might ignore the deadline. The suggestion that the Seahawks might even deal Wilson. You know, that silly season stuff got to a point where even Tyrann Mathieu was tweeting that Russ wanted to go to New York. Then there was that ton of digital ink that spilled over what the Giants should give up to get Russ. And my thought still right now is, what you give up everything. You give up everything to get that guy. Because if you don't have any lead quarterback, you don't have Jack. That might be a gross oversimplification. And no, when I say you give up everything, I don't mean you give up a Herschel Walker type haul. But in the NFL, you, of course, have two teams, two types of teams, ones that have an elite quarterback and ones that do not. And there's only one type of team that wins consistently in the NFL, the ones that have the elite quarterback. So if you want to have an NFL team and you want to win NFL games, you better have an NFL quarterback. Russell Wilson is an NFL quarterback. And if you find one, you keep him until you can't keep him any longer. Which is why all that noise, all that hemming and hawing about whether Seattle was going to pay this guy or not was ridiculous. If they were serious, if they want to win, you pay him. And they did. Reportedly to the tune of 4 years, $140 mil, and a signing bonus of $65 mil. $65 mil up front. So that deal makes him the highest paid player in the NFL. Tremendous. Awesome. Turns out that Russ's deadline worked. It worked after all. So, if you get that deal, and you're now the highest paid guy in the NFL, and you get $65 mil up front, how do you celebrate a day that great? You do with a video from your bed.
Hey, Seattle. We got a deal.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, we can go to sleep.
See y'all in the morning.
Damn. Wow. Oh, I see you, Russ. All right then, Russ. You do you. Man, I gotta say, nothing is more Russ than that video. I mean, damn, I'm trying to stick to football, but how can I stick to football after I just saw that video? Like, when I saw that on my phone, I thought that was cool. But when I just saw that in studio on the monitor, man. I see you working, Russ. I wonder if Thomas and Bonanza looked at that pig and said, yo, just kidding, Thomas. Yeah, let me tell you about that video. You do you, Russ. You do you. Hey, believe me, that video is going to get its own take. I'm just trying to stay on topic. The topic is football. The topic is paying the quarterback what he's worth.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Good night, y'all. Man. I mean that, Russ. You do you, because that was awesome. A little cringy, but really awesome.
See y'all in the morning.
See you in the morning, Russ. Slightly cringy, totally awesome. Anyway, that will get its own take. I'm not done with that yet. In fact, I'd give anything to see that again. Hey, Sharon, can you re-rack that and run that back on CBS Sports Network? Man, that was amazing. I want to get back to the football aspect of that, but I can't. That video, Russ and his lady in bed. Yes, I do. Russ and his lady in bed, under the covers, looking into the phone and saying, good night, y'all. Good night, Seattle. Good night, Hawk fans. Roll it.
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
Yeah, we do.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, we can go to sleep.
See y'all in the morning.
Good morning, Russ. What's up? How'd you sleep, bro? Hey, listen, the fact that he has a new contract is not surprising. Let's not make this so complicated. Is Russell Wilson a good quarterback? Yes. Should they pay him? Yes. All right, they did. We're done. Thanks. Not surprising that he's got that new deal. Just like it's not surprising that he's the highest paid player in the NFL. That should not be something that you should all be tripping on. You want to trip on that video from the bed, you go right ahead. But not the fact that he's now the highest paid player in the NFL. Is he the best player in the NFL? No. But the title of highest paid player in the NFL is always about two things. It's about one, being a quarterback. Two, timing. Because Russell Wilson took that belt from Aaron Rodgers, who took that belt from Matt Ryan, who took that belt from Kirk Cousins, who took that belt from Jimmy Garoppolo, who took that belt from Matthew Stafford. So given the list of other guys who have had that title, is there any reason why Wilson should not have that title? Of course not. He's got a Super Bowl. He should have two. He's been to one Pro Bowl after another. There's no doubt that he deserves to get paid. Now, I understand that he's a really polarizing player for some people, but that argument is just old. It's tired. You know, the fact he was a third-round pick. He was thought to be too small in the NFL. It's not going to work. I mean, remember when there was an actual debate over Russell Wilson or Matt Flynn? You know, that debate ended a long time ago. He's worked himself into a position to be the highest-paid player in the NFL. He's earned his money. Teams do not give that money away. Good for him. He earned it. And no, I don't care that Wilson's deal makes it hard for teams to sign other guys because of the salary cap. And I'm not interested in your breakdown of teams that win the Super Bowl and how that compares with the salary cap hit that the quarterback takes. That's not his problem. That is the team's problem. And honestly, it's kind of an artificial problem with a very simple solution. Raise the salary cap. NFL teams are not hurting for money. Each team could add 10 to 20 mil to the cap and not even notice. These are guys who play an extremely violent game that take a lot of hits. Wilson has taken more than his share of hits over the years. The guy deserves to be paid. He's getting paid. It's simple. Don't make it so complicated. He earned it, period. And yes, I will circle back to the cringy announcement from his sack a little bit later on. Because I know that's what you want to talk about. Hey, listen, quarterbacks in the NFL are different guys. I'd argue that Tom Brady is kind of a different guy. My man Aaron Rodgers, a little bit of a different cat. Russ is different. How do I know? He just pushed out that video from his bed.
But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
See y'all in the morning?
We got a deal.
We got a deal, Seattle.
Go Hawks.
Me and my lady got a deal, but that's none of your business.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. War Lady Hawks.
War Lady.
Must be nice.
See y'all in the morning.
At PJ and the Mile High tweets, building a brand from the bed is the only way. Signed, all of the Kardashians. Sex sells. Sex is a great brand. So is the bed.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Bro, I just hope you're on a Casper mattress. Promo code Rome, Russ. promo code Rome. Casper Mattress, Russ. Lie on it. Casper Mattress. Lie down on it. Sleep on it. Wake up refreshed. See you in the morning. Promo code Rome. Capital R-O-M-E. Backwards, Emor. Frontwards, Rome. $100 off the purchase of select mattresses, Russ. Promo code Rome. Additional fees may apply to Alaska or Hawaii, so it's a good thing you're in Seattle, Russ. And as you know, Russ, terms and conditions do apply on that mattress.
See y'all in the morning.
See you in the morning, bruh. Yeah, JC in Calgary tweets, that was borderline erotic. At Mean Mountaineer tweets, Matthew McConaughey thinks that Russell Wilson video voice is creepy. It's not creepy, man. It's sensual.
But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
At John D. in the Bay tweets, Russ's voice in that video is definitely authentic. Signed, Jeff in Southfield.
Hey, Seattle. We got a deal.
I don't know, John. That sounds like the voice of a guy who just got 65 mil up front. That's how I'd sound. If somebody said to me, hey, Vance Mack, here's 65 mil up front, signing bonus, guaranteed jack. My response would be, oh, hell yeah. Jungle, see you in the morning. Think I'm going to nap it out on my Casper right now. The new head coach of the Bruins is Mick Cronin. Mick, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Great to be back in the jungle, Romy.
My man, you are the coach of UCLA. So being the head coach.
I love SoCal.
You meant it too, Mick. You meant it. Let me ask you.
You thought I was bluffing, didn't you?
No, no, I didn't. Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, no, I didn't. All right, so being the head coach at UCLA, obviously, Mick, you know this. It's one of the most iconic jobs in all of sports. What's it mean to you to be the one with that job? Does it all feel kind of real, or is it still a little bit surreal?
Well, it was surreal last week, and then we got Saturday we got on the court for our first workout, and just like anything else, you know, it becomes, you're the coach of a basketball program, and you got a team and young people with dreams, and you got to get focused on the job at hand, and you know, hopefully, my experience at Cincinnati and taking over for Coach Huggins and the turmoil that I had to deal with back in 06 and growing up as a coach. Got me prepared for, you know, everything that goes with this job. But like you said, couldn't turn it down. It's obviously one of the most iconic jobs in sports. You know, I hadn't heard anybody say that, Jim, till you said that.
It's true, Mick. It really is. Now, we can get into whether or not UCLA is what it used to be. I'm going to get to that a little bit later on, but to me, it is. It is one of the most iconic jobs in all of sports. So I think probably, Mick, it was really surreal, and then it got real quickly. But going back to Cincinnati, you're from Cincinnati. You went to the University of Cincinnati. You had that program there absolutely rolling, and we're bringing back a great team, so you're not going to leave for any job. What was your reaction when UCLA reached out, and then how did you go about making that decision?
Well, excitement, you know, it's always, you feel good when people recognize your accomplishments and they feel that you're qualified for a position like this. And obviously, you know, in college basketball, there's, you throw out names, you're going to throw out UCLA, Kentucky, North Carolina, probably, you know, in no particular order. So honored when they reached out to me. But like you said, yeah, I had a great thing going. And, you know, I evaluated it, and I thought, you know, have I taken this thing as far as I can at Cincinnati? Do I want to turn down the opportunity to coach where John Wooden coached? You know, will I be able to live with myself the rest of my life? Obviously, you and I have been friendly. I've been coming on your show for, you know, 4 or 5 years now, so you know my affinity for Southern California. So then my daughter comes into play, you know, what opportunities for her to go from 7th grade to 12th grade out here with me and expand her horizons as a person and opportunities for her life. So there's a lot of things that played into it. The basketball part was easy, though, to be honest with you, Romy. I mean, you know, having a chance to be the coach at UCLA, for me, like I think some people are happy where they're at. You know, I don't begrudge them. But to get a chance to find out what I'm made of, you know, I think, you know, I proved what I could prove as the head coach at Cincinnati, and I feel like I've paid my debt there. I did everything I could do for that program. Obviously, I wish I could have taken them to a title and a Final Four, but individually, personally, to challenge myself. And, I think that's how you grow as a person. That's how you find, you find out on your journey in life what you can become.
Mick Cronin joining us. He's the head basketball coach at UCLA now. Mick, you got to take that shot. You got to take that on. You got to take that challenge. But it doesn't mean that leaving is easy. In fact, you've said the saying goodbye to Cincinnati, right? And the players, was the toughest thing you've ever had to do in your adult life. What was that like, and what was your message to your players?
Well, it was tough because I knew I was never going to leave for just any place. How do you know that the UCLA job's going to open? Very few college jobs where I thought it would fit for my daughter and myself. And so when I recruited those guys, I mean, it was laughable to think that I would ever leave. You know, so many college coaches hop around at times, right? So it was laughable. So we always talked about that in recruiting. You know, I was the one guy you never had to worry about that happening. So at the end of the day, you know, I felt terrible about it. That was the only part for me, was getting over that. And, man, walking into that room and telling those guys was brutal. But they made it easy on me, I'll be honest with you. They've been awesome. They've been great. Obviously, I want them all to stay at Cincinnati and have a great year. And that's what I told them. You know, we don't play next year unless we're in the NCAA tournament. I got high expectations for them, and I love them. So when you have real relationships with people as a coach, it's not going to end just because I'm not the coach. And that's what in the last week, I've realized through communication with all them and their families that how real it really was. And you know, my job's to try to now help them as a friend and tell them what's best for them. And they need to bond together there as a team and do their thing.
UCLA Bruins head coach Mick Cronin, my guest. You know, Mick, I would imagine, like, UCLA, it's an amazing opportunity, but it's not an automatic yes, right? I mean, you're going to do your homework.
Sure.
I'm curious, what kind of conversations did you have with UCLA, and what kind of questions did you want to make sure that you asked so you knew the place was the right place for you?
Well, you know, much has been made over time, right, about the Bruins, UCLA basketball, and Coach Wooden, the eras, and commitment to doing things the way that other people do them. You know, there's so much spending now, right, that goes on, Jim, in college athletics, travel, locker rooms, all that type of stuff. So they quickly assured me, Dan Guerrero and Josh Rebholz and his people, that you know, their commitment was, whoever we hire, we want them to tell us what we need to do to play at the highest level, to be able to, where nobody else says, hey, you know, we have this amenity, and UCLA does not. So they made that very clear very early. So with that said, I thought, you know, that would have been the only thing that you've heard over time that maybe hadn't changed here, when I got here, though, our practice facility, our Mo Austin Center, is just unbelievable. I mean, the facilities here are awesome. You know, some things that we'll upgrade, some things we'll tweak and change along the way. Obviously, I'm still learning the academic side of this campus, and, well, you know, a world-class institution, and, you know, making sure that our guys fit in from that spot. So that was the real stuff, is, you know, as far as making sure that we were all on the same page as our vision. You know, where do we think, what do we want UCLA basketball to see? You know, where does Dan Guerrero see it? Where does Mick Cronin see it? And how do we get it there? And let's do it together. And that was, once we had that talk, I felt really confident. That's when I really was like, man, I hope they pick me. I want this job.
We're talking to Mick Cronin. You got the job. Now, when you look at that job, Mick, is it a rebuild that's going to take a bit of time, or can you get this thing turned around quickly? How does it look to you right now?
Well, we got a lot of young guys in the program. Now, we lost a couple of guys to the NBA that have declared already. Moses Brown probably heading that way as well. My job is to support Jalen Hands, Chris Wilkes, and Moses Brown. So, that being said, you know, we signed a couple of really good players from here from SoCal, Jaime Jaquez and Jake Kyman, they signed early. They're committed. They're affiliated. They want to be with the Bruins, and I think that says a lot about what type of job this is when they were going to come, no matter who the coach was. That doesn't happen at other schools, I promise you. So that says a lot about Westwood and UCLA right there. So we're going to have a young team, and I'm getting to learn and know these guys, and it's just going to be a step-by-step process. You got to build your culture, get to know these guys, and ultimately, hey, you got to play as a unit, play as a team, but you got to have talent. So I'm just trying to say, right now, I'm so busy, it's day to day, man. It's just, I'm trying to get through each day. They got me rocking and rolling here in Westwood.
No doubt. So what about those first steps to building the program and the culture? Everybody talks about culture, but especially when you get a new opportunity, what are the first steps to building the program and the culture that you want?
We talked about it earlier, and right with my players at Cincinnati. I think you have to have a clear vision. And in basketball, unlike football, the head coach and the coaching staff, like you got to develop your relationships. And we're extremely in our sport. You have a chance to be extremely close and get to know every one of your players. They know exactly what you're going to demand from an effort standpoint, from a commitment standpoint. They know what you are, what you're about, what you want them to be about. So for me, that's what I'm looking forward to, getting all this other stuff done, because I got to make sure that these guys look in my eyes and they know what I'm going to expect of them. And building our relationship is through honesty. It takes time, but you can do it in our sport. That's just what I believe. You know, I think, you know, people see me coach. I'm passionate, and I have relationships with my guys. But it's because we're so close. We're all just trying to win. We're all trying to accomplish a goal together. So that's my biggest thing. You're talking about building culture. And I could never be a football coach, Romy. How do you even know 100 guys' names?
Right.
Basketball is very intimate at the college level because kids are going away from home for the first time, and you're an extension of their parents. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most, is clearing my schedule so I can get with the guys on this team.
Mick Cronin joins me for another moment or so. Now, Mick, you and Ben Howland go back a long way.
Yes.
And I know you studied how he did at UCLA. I've known Ben, we go back to UC Santa Barbara when he was an assistant coach,
right,
and I got my
right.
break. So I know what I sat with him, Mick, at the Final Four when he got the job at UCLA, and I'm like, Ben, that's amazing. Can you believe this? He's like, no, can you believe this? And so you and I are having a conversation right now. What can you learn from studying his teams and how he did on that job?
Well, I think, you know, I've reached out to him about, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with Coach Allen. I told him when he retires, hopefully – I got this thing really going here at UCLA. He can be special assistant from Santa Barbara when he retires. So, he's been great. He's a great guy. But when you look at the success of, you know, recruiting is everything. But they played to win. I mean, I think, Jim, you watch those teams, and they defended, they played together, they shared the ball. And he had elite players. I mean, obviously some tremendous guys that are still elite players in the NBA. But he got them to play to win. He got them to play with each other, and I think that's the key. You got to make sure if you're going to have guys that are whoever you're going to have, even whether they're one and done or they're going to be here 4 years, that they play basketball to win. They play together, and they all realize that they're here. And this is my term. They're not here to rent the four letters, because you know probably the UCLA is the four most iconic letters in college athletics, let's be honest about it. So you got to make sure guys aren't renting. They got to own. And, you know, guys like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Love and all, you know, it's so hard for me to get back to all of them, Romy, because these guys owned it. They love it. They live it. They're all reaching out to me. And when I had lunch with Kareem, I mean, his love for UCLA it was unbelievable, you know, and I got to make sure that the guys on this team respect that. And if they do that, everything will fall into place. I think Ben did a great job of making sure that happened when he was here.
He is the head basketball coach now at UCLA, the 2018 National Coach of the Year, a two-time Conference Coach of the Year. He led Cincinnati to 9 straight NCAA tournament appearances. Mick, I know you love SoCal. It's good to have you here. Mick, thanks so much. We'll talk again soon.
Wait to see you, Del Mar, buddy.
I cannot wait to tell you about a new sponsor here in the jungle, Johnny O. I love Johnny O, and you will too, for a number of reasons. Now, personally, I don't have this issue, but I know a number of you do. The issue of showing too much chest hair. Bad look, bad vibe. Johnny O knows this, and Johnny O has the solution. The genius Johnny O tweener button. Pretty much the smartest thing ever. And essentially saving all of mankind. Johnny O invented and patented the tweener button. What this is a hidden button between the second and third button featured on all Johnny O shirts. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up, but not too unbuttoned. And right now, you can use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com at checkout through May 30th. That's 20% off the regular price button-ups, which come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles. Plus, shipping is free for orders over $85. That's johnny-o.com, promo code ROME, and get 20% off your first order and free shipping on orders over $85. Once again, go to johnny-o.com for your tweener shirt at 20% off and check out the wide selection of shirts and other products ranging from polos to shorts, pants, swim, and more. Again, johnny-o.com. The NBA playoffs are a roller coaster. If that second half of last night's Warriors-Clippers game didn't remind you, I'm not sure what will. A team that scored 72 points in less than 20 minutes, and they did it on the road against a team that has won 3 titles in the last 4 years. But if that in and of itself was not a big enough reminder, check the Philadelphia 76ers. If you go back 24 hours, they seem like they were in a world of trouble. Like they were a mess. Joel Embiid's knee was a major question mark. Ben Simmons appeared to take a run at Sixer fan. They had a guy break out a cell phone on the bench in a playoff game, in a loss, and they fell behind the Nets 1-0. In other words, they were jacked. And it seemed like, you, more importantly, so was the process.
Trust the process?
All of a sudden, you couldn't trust that process. The last several years, they've been trusting the process. It all had built to this point, and then it looked like they were going to implode on the big stage. Impending disaster. Catastrophe. And we all know what Philly fan does with something like that. He goes, Philly fan. In the meantime, the Nets were doing everything right. That front office and coaching staff was getting a lot of love. Understandably so, for how they built that team out. They built that team out of nothing, and they had an identity. Not only did they have an identity, they had people talking about a playoff series win. So that game two was huge. And then you have game two last night. More specifically, the third quarter, because Philadelphia went into the break with a 1-point lead. Lost game one, only up by a point at halftime, and then Brett Brown goes off. Jimmy Butler talked about his coach going
okay,
off.
Brett, I see you. Yeah, he came in here, said a few cuss words, shocked me a little bit to tell you the truth. But I like it. That's that type of energy I love. He was making sure everybody did their job, letting them know you can't have it. It's not winning basketball, and we came out and do what we're supposed to do.
Boban said it was the angriest he'd ever seen Brett Brown. Quote, he's supposed to do that. He gave us the energy to show us what we can do, end quote. So I'm not exactly sure what Brett Brown said, but whatever he said, however he said it, it did work because the Sixers exploded for 51 in the third, tying the NBA record for most points in a quarter in a playoff game. Joel went from a game-time decision to an 8-0 run on his own to start the third. That was part of Philadelphia's 21-2 run to start the half. Ben Simmons had a triple-double. And then Philadelphia gets a blowout that they badly needed. They even had a few laughs. Joel tried to explain what happened when he caught Jarrett Allen in the face with his elbow in the second quarter. Joe was called for a flagrant one on that play. And then after he watched it back, he admitted, yeah, I probably did deserve that.
I wasn't surprised. I saw the replay. Obviously, it wasn't intentional. I got him pretty good, and I'm sorry about it. But... Okay. I'm sorry about it. It wasn't intentional, but it's just me trying to be aggressive. I'm not usually humble. That's why he's laughing. But I was just trying to be aggressive.
It's an outstanding moment, but not even the best moment of that night, because Kevin Harlan was on the mic last night. And if Kevin Harlan is on the mic, you know you're going to see something or hear something that you'll probably remember for the rest of your life. He is a true professional. He doesn't mail in anything. Not even his live reads for his sponsors. Check the delivery that he gives for this one.
NBA playoffs on TNT are brought to you by Burger King. Get the Angry Whopper, and it's back with a spicy kick. The Angry Whopper! Only at Burger King. And by Kia, the official automotive partner of the NBA. Visit Kia.com. I'd like an Angry Whopper right inside my angry stomach.
The Angry Whopper.
The Angry Whopper.
Respect for the Angry Whopper.
The Angry Whopper.
As somebody who's done a live read or two in my day, that's game respecting game. And there was just so much pride, so much passion, so much fire, so much anger in that live read. It was incredible. Like, that burger was pissed. And Kevin Harlan is the only person alive who could draw that kind of vitriol out of that slab of beef. Run that back.
NBA playoffs on TNT are brought to you by Burger King. Get the Angry Whopper, and it's back with a spicy kick.
The Angry Whopper!
Only at Burger King. And by...
Have you ever heard a more dominant live read ever in your life? Somebody get my man an Emmy for that read right now. And get him a burger. Stat. And if that's all he did last night, that would have been incredible. But he went legend once again in the fourth quarter. At Sixer home games, there's a promotion that if an opposing player misses two free throws in a row, fans get fed. And so it was. Trevion Graham missed the first of two at the line with less than 5 minutes to go. In a blowout, the crowd comes to life. And then so did Kevin Harlan, because another miss meant free food for everybody. And nobody loves anything more than everybody loves free food. The only thing better than free food is Kevin Harlan talking about free food. Roll him.
Uh-oh, here comes the Philly faithful again now. That Frosty, it's on the line here if he misses it. Uh-oh.
They can taste it.
Yes, they can.
They can feel it. They can see it.
It's an amazing, amazing call. I mean, that's going to rival Al Michaels. Do you believe in miracles? Do you hear what he said? They can taste it. They can feel it. They can see it. They got it. That's a Frosty for everybody. Slurp it and enjoy it. My man's the greatest. I mean, sure, Joel was a beast last night. Ben Simmons had that triple-double. Bobin was dominant. But the star of the evening was Kevin Harlan. Get that man a burger and a shake. Stat. He earned it. And he'll enjoy it.
The Angry Whopper.
Slurp it.
Frosty for everybody.
Enjoy it.
The Angry Whopper.
Yesterday was not just any old day at Dodger Stadium. Clayton Kershaw back on the bump. Matt Kemp. Alex Wood. Kyle Farmer. Back in town. But more importantly, so was Yasiel Puig, the supernova known as your friend Puig. Was a Dodger for six seasons, and he rode back into town in the most Puig way imaginable by almost not showing up. There may not be a better way for Yasiel Puig to make his triumphant return to Dodger Stadium than by rolling in 70 minutes late. There was a press conference scheduled specifically for Puig that he nearly no-showed. He completely airmailed the National League ring presentation that Dave Roberts and Dodgers management held for the four former Dodgers. Again, textbook Puig. And then after all of that, he strolls to the dish in the first inning of Clayton Kershaw's 2019 debut. He stares down the last pitcher to win an MVP. He falls behind quickly in the count, 1-2. And what does he do? He launches a freaking Rawlings halfway to the moon.
The pitch. And a fly ball to deep center field. Did he get it all? He did. How about that? By coming home and saying hello to the team you once played for as he took Kershaw to straightaway center. A two-run line drive home run, and the Reds on the Puig long ball have taken a 2-0 lead.
Absolutely perfect. Reds radio. I'm not sure there's ever been anybody who's ever been happier about anything than Puig was for taking Kershaw deep the way he did. And I'll get to the bigger story in a second, the return of Clayton Kershaw. But let me have one more minute with my man Yasiel. Yasiel, man, what a showman this guy is. You know why you show up 70 minutes late for a presser? Blow off a ring ceremony and then drop a bomb on a three-time Cy Young Award winner and one of the best to ever do it? Because you can. And maybe the best thing about that was Dave Roberts' reaction to that. He basically said it. Puig's gonna Puig.
Is there any reason reason why Yasiel wasn't there? Did he provide any explanation?
I haven't talked to him, and his teammates didn't know either.
Are you happy not to have to answer those questions from the other side now? Am
I happy? Yeah, I am happy I'm not answering this question. So, yeah.
Dave Roberts, like the best guy ever, nicest guy ever. Are you happy not to have to answer any questions about Puig anymore? Quote, am I happy? Yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm really happy.
Yeah.
The only thing he was happier than that about was everything that happened for Clayton Kershaw after Yasiel went big fly. Because Clayton Kershaw went out there and looked like and pitched like Clayton Kershaw. And if you've been watching the Dodgers this spring and you've seen that freaking mash unit that they've been running out to the bump, you cannot ask for anything more than that. Because that rotation truly has been struggling.
Struggling.
Rich Hill, still hurt. Hyun-Jin Ryu, down with a groin injury. Walker Buehler. Julio Urias. Kenta Maeda. All have gotten knocked around. Ross Stripling has been the team's only consistent starter. And the plan for him was to come out of the pen, not to be their stopper every fifth day. But watching last night, judging last night, it looks like Kersh may be back. And while everybody keeps talking about the velo on his fastball, and it may have only been hovering around 90, he was still wiping guys out with the crooked stuff. Uncle Charlie going 12-6, the slider falling right off that table. And for a guy who's been living in the bullpen and throwing simulated games, the actual game looked pretty damn good, right? 7 innings, only 84 pitches, 6 Ks, only 4 singles after Yasiel bat flipped on him. Every one of those innings that he threw last night meant the Dodger bully did not have to. And then in the ninth, Jock Peterson made sure that every Dodger fan went home happy when he walked the Reds off.
Dodgers hoping for a walk-off from Peterson. With 6 home runs on the year and a fly ball to right. It's on its way, and it is a walk-off home run for Jock Peterson. And the Dodgers win it 4-3.
Dodgers Radio. So when you spend the better part of a week getting your teeth kicked in by the Cards and the Brewers, you take whatever you can get. And when your ace spends the first 3 weeks of the season on the shelf and has Puig pimp one on him in the first inning back, getting that W's got to feel like 2. Puig, gonna Puig, but more importantly, for the 2-time defending National League champs, Kershaw, at least for one night, gonna Kershaw. And damn, did they need that? Did they ever need that? Especially after the way that night started. So good for them. Good for Puig. Why do I think that he was happy, even with the loss? Bonanza, Oregon. Thomas in Bonanza. Thomas, what's going on?
Oh, man, I'm just recovering. It was tough. Nobody made it. As far as I know, there were several of us. And I don't think anybody made it to 44 bong hits. We were also required to drink a six-pack and 6 shots of whiskey and 6 hours and 18 minutes. I woke up in the barn on a pile of hay, and another couple, I don't even think they're talking to this day. I mean, it was a total disaster. It was the worst idea I think I've ever had.
No, in no way, Thomas. 44 bong hits, 6 beers, and 6 shots of whiskey in 6 hours didn't work out great for everybody?
No, it was, man, it was brutal. Like I said, I woke up in the barn. I mean, I looked over and off my bale of hay, I looked over and there's my pig in her pen, and I got the barn cats. They're all crawling around me wanting to get fed, and yeah, and my girlfriend wasn't even going to let me in the house.
How about that pig? Did that pig have a smile on its face? And never mind, don't answer that,
yeah,
Thomas.
Oh, yeah, you know that.
Okay.
Sweet, baby.
All right, Thomas, thank you very much. Broham, good luck with it.
Good night,